This is John Shannon with Radio Free Galisteo, and I am speaking with J.J. Amaworo Wilson. And J.J. is a German-born Anglo-Nigerian-American writer. His 2016 novel, Damnificados, won 3 international awards, was an Oprah Top 10 pick, and has since been translated into French and German. His work has appeared in African-American Journal, Justice Journal, The Penguin Book of New Black Writing, and many other publications. And he is currently the writer-in-residence at Western New Mexico University. That's fantastic, because I'm speaking to you from Galisteo, New Mexico. And welcome, JJ.
Thank you so much, John. I'm really pleased to be on the show. It's great to meet you. Great to be able to speak to your listeners.
Well, thank you. And we are going to be talking about your current novel that's out, published by PM Press. And the title is Nazaré.
That's right.
Did I get it
right? You got it. You nailed it.
All right. Fantastic. This novel is, again, published by PM Press under their spectacular fiction heading. This is a very interesting, I guess it's what fabulous fiction, really. I mean, can you give us an overview of Nazaré?
Absolutely. Yeah. The book is actually based on, or inspired by, I should say, inspired by the Arab Spring of 2010 and 2011. The book is all about a revolution against a dictatorship. The revolution is led by a homeless orphan child, a boy, and the woman who sort of takes him in and adopts him. Together, they manage to build an army. It's really a peasant's revolt, John. They build this army of the poor, workers, fishermen, lapsed nuns, etc. It's a real sort of random bunch of people. And they build an army to attempt to topple this dictator. So it's really a book about a revolution. It's in a genre known as magical realism. So it's a little different from fantasy, but everything is written as if it's real. Mm-hmm. But there are things that we in the West would consider magical, things like ghosts, people levitating, the ancestors speaking to you, things that I guess in many older societies are not really considered magical, in indigenous societies are not considered magical. But for us in the West, it's magic.
Certainly. And being out here in Galisteo, New Mexico, in the midst of basically the multiple Pueblo nations that are out here, that would all fit in very well with their history. So
sure.
It wouldn't be a surprise to them. Inspired by the Arab Spring. But where did kin come from?
Okay. Well, let me just track back a little. It was inspired by the Arab Spring originally, which is around 10 years ago. But after that, I did a bunch of research looking into many, many revolutions, particularly the Cuban Revolution with Fidel Castro, Che, Raul Castro, Cienfuegos, et cetera, and various other revolutions like the Haitian Revolution led by Toussaint Louverture a couple of hundred years ago. And so it has elements of all those revolutions that aim to topple dictators. Now, the main character of Kin, who is the child, who is the boy, I'm not really sure where that came from. I'm not sure why it had to be a boy, a child that led the revolution. But I do know there's something innocent about children. There's something special about children because they're not as cynical as us adults. There's a purity to them. And this character of Kin has this purity to him in the way he conducts himself and in the way he leads a revolution. He has no cynicism. He believes in magic the way children do. So maybe that was why I chose a boy to lead the revolution.
And he comes from a small fishing village, and the first encounter that he has is with, the key encounter that kicks off this revolution. And I'm not giving away the story here because this is part of the description. He comes upon a whale, and that whale becomes sort of a central piece as to why things get started. What's the whale in all this?
Well, that's a great question. A whale washes up on the beach, and this boy, he's only 11 years old at the time, he's the first to see it. And then I'm not giving the story away either.
Okay, yeah, I want people to grab onto this and
right. So yeah.
Let's give them a good taste.
Yeah. Basically the whole village comes out, as it always does when a whale washes up on the beach, and the whole village tries to push the whale back into the ocean. But the whale is too big and too heavy. And in the end, everyone kind of drifts away except for this boy. And this boy alone tries to push a 60-ton whale into the ocean. And this is it's a kind of symbol of his determination, because the one thing this kid never does is give up against the most impossible odds. And that's what it takes to topple a dictator. That's what it takes to lead a revolution. Because the odds are heavily against you. In any revolution, the odds are heavily against you. And so him trying to push this whale into the ocean is almost a sort of symbolic act of what he later does later in the novel in trying to get rid of the dictator. So it's really an event that it introduces many of the main characters. It introduces the woman who will take this boy in. It introduces a very important figure who's a priest and a healer called Fundogu. It introduces the dictator who comes along and sees the whale. So really, yeah, it is a central event because it's kind of the springboard from which everything happens in the novel. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as I was considering it, it was, here he is. Basically, this is in fact the struggle. This is the struggle, yeah, against this enormous system that is existent, and he's actually trying to make an effort. And the fact that most of the people just give up is also it's commentary on what happens in most places around the world. I think that's why the revolutions are far and I guess few between, or at least the ones we learn about that are successful.
Yes.
That's what I was picking up from the kid trying to push the whale back in. So this is set in a small fishing village, no name. You're currently in Brazil.
I am. Yeah.
Was there an influence of a particular country that got this story going?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the book is connected to my life story in that I've lived in 11 countries. I've visited around 70. I've spent a lot of time in Latin America, and I've read a lot of Latin American fiction, particularly magical realism, like Gabriel Garcia Marquez, Mario Vargas Llosa, those big names. And so my style and my outlook is, I mean, it's very international because of who I am, but also there's that Latin American influence. And besides the literature, there's also the political side of Latin America, you know, a country cursed by colonialism. Here in Latin America, we're still feeling the repercussions of colonialism, which, of course, happened hundreds of years ago. But also, you mentioned, John, that I'm in Brazil. When I'm in Brazil, I stay in this house next to the ocean. Nothing luxurious, very, very simple. And I walk on the beach every morning, and there I see fish washed up on the beach. I haven't seen a whale yet, although apparently there was one a few months ago. And I actually stay in a little fishing village. And so the whole setting of the novel Nazaré is kind of partly based on the things I see every day when I'm here in Brazil, because I live in Brazil part of the year, and then the rest of the time I'm in New Mexico. I'm in Silver City.
Okay. Great.
But yeah.
We need to get you up here to Galisteo.
Love to. Oh yeah.
Consider the invitation extended.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we'd love to have you here. Come up, do a reading here in our Radio Free Galisteo Studios, which is also a Quarter Mill Gallery. I was really surprised and pleased to see that you had a New Mexico connection. So this this is great.
Thank you. I'll take you up on that. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
I'd love to.
We're going
to
make it happen.
I'd love to. Yeah.
Nazaré translates to what, the Great Wave? Or is that a subtitle? Or
no, Nazaré is actually it's a city in Portugal known for having the largest waves in the world. It's actually a surfing mecca, a surfer's mecca, because it has these huge waves. But of course, Nazaré is also a translation of Nazareth. And there are quite a few biblical references in the novel. I guess I'll let the readers read and find out.
Yeah.
But
just
I'll give one example. The heroine, the woman who takes in the hero, Kin, she is called Jessa. Jessa is a feminization of Jesus. Mm. So she's a Christ-like figure. She's she's suffered a lot in life, but she's still, she fights for the people. And so what you have is Jessa in this novel called Nazaré, Jessa of Nazaré, which is pretty close to Jesus of Nazareth. It's not a religious book at all, but there are biblical references. I would say it's quite a spiritual book.
Certainly.
But obviously that's different from being religious. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. You know, as we've been talking about this, you have the hero, the main character, trying to push this whale back out into the ocean, and it strikes me how that's exactly the opposite of the old man and the sea.
Oh yeah, I never thought of that. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's the reverse of it. Really, it's interesting.
It really is.
Yeah, the old man is makes this incredible catch and the struggle to bring it all the way back in, but Kin is struggling to free this animal. It's interesting.
Yeah. You know, there's a British, he was a poet and an artist, William Blake. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you all know him. One of my favorite lines from one of his poems is, "Everything that lives is holy." And throughout this novel, there are loads and loads of animals in the novel, actually. There's a gang of anarchist bats who live in the courtroom. And whenever the corrupt judge appears in the courtroom, the bats kind of swoop down and try and dive bomb him. And there's a camel that plays a major role. And of course, there's the whale. Basically, I was putting the animal kingdom into the novel, and the animals are on the revolutionary side of the novel. They're on the side of the good, as if nature itself is working against tyranny. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that's a theme that some readers might find interesting, that nature, including the whale and the bats and the camel, etc., they are all working for the revolution.
Yeah, I think that's something that'll certainly resonate out here in Galisteo, which is full of animal lovers of all stripes: dogs, cats, horses, cows. I know I'm forgetting enough parrots. I mean, we have a great variety out here. So I'm sure this is going to really resonate. Yeah, there's a certain purity to that, right? You know, it's sort of bringing things back in balance. Tell us a little bit about your work at Western New Mexico.
Yeah, I'm the writer in residence at Western New Mexico University, which just means I mentor a lot of young writers. I help the faculty members get published. I hold workshops. For the last decade, I actually helped organize the Southwest Word Fiesta, which is a biennial literary festival that we hold there in Silver City. So I do a lot of work both at the university itself, but also with the community. We're a small community, but there's lots of very talented writers there and artists. It's quite an artsy little town. So I try to incorporate community events with university events as the writer in residence. And if I may also mention, we've just started a university press called Mimbres Press of Western New Mexico University. We've just published our very first book, a magnificent poetry collection called The Algorithm of I by Jack Crocker. And so we're just soliciting submissions right now. I'll just say the name again, if I may. It's Mimbres Press of Western New Mexico University. And so that's a really exciting development. And I'm working as the editorial director of Mimbres Press. So I'll be looking at the manuscripts as they come in.
Website?
Absolutely. Just Google Mimbres Press of Western New Mexico University. Yeah.
And I'll put a link here in with the podcast as well.
So hey, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
You bet. Well, this is great, man. I really did not expect you to be so closely connected to our little archipelago. So we have people here that refer to Galisteo as an archipelago in the midst of the high desert. I get your reference to where you're at in Silver City. You've lived in 11 countries, been in 70. Let's do the easy one first. Where have you lived the longest?
Funnily enough, it is now the United States. I grew up in England, as you can probably tell from my accent.
Yeah, I'm trying to place it.
Yeah. I've got a slight twang, I guess. I've been in the States, I don't know, nearly 15 years, I guess. But I was born in Germany. I also lived in Egypt, which is why I was so interested in the Arab Spring, which happened in 2010 and 11, a few years after I'd left. But I still knew a lot of people in Egypt who were involved in that revolution against Hosni Mubarak, who'd been in power for decades. I lived in Lesotho, which is a small country, landlocked country in the middle of South Africa, which when I was living there was the time when, you know, I went there because Nelson Mandela was just being released. And I went there to try and do some work for the anti-apartheid movement. This is back in the 90s. So I lived in some really interesting places, some places where there was a lot of revolting that needed to be done. You know, revolutions were in the offing because they needed to be, particularly in apartheid South Africa. And I also lived in some really very nice countries too. Like I lived in Italy for a couple of years. I was just outside Milan, a place called Pavia.
Well, I used to live in Italy too. So
did you really?
Yeah,
parli italiano.
Sì, naturalmente. Vicino Treviso.
No way! Oh wow!
Yeah, near Venice and Treviso. Yeah.
Oh, I know that area. Ah, very cool.
Yeah, man. All right. JJ, why did you end up in Brazil?
Oh, I went to Brazil for love. actually, no, I went to Brazil originally on a book tour, and I was giving a talk about one of my books, and I met my wife, my future wife. She was in the audience, so it must have been a damn good reading I gave, because we were married shortly after.
Wow. Yeah, must have been a hell of a read. Very good. I'll have to find out about your technique. So, JJ, what do you hope people take away from this novel?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that a novelist is an entertainer, and so I hope that people enjoy the work. I hope it entertains them. Obviously, there are certain political messages in any novel about a revolution, about toppling a dictator. But I hope that readers enjoy the language. I hope they enjoy the story, because it is an adventure story. It's about a young boy growing up to be a revolutionary and leading a revolution. So, it's an adventure story. In terms of the political side of it, I hope readers will also enjoy that side of it. particularly that sense of justice. There's a great line from a Syrian composer called Malik Jandali, who says that the power of the people is stronger than the people in power. And the book is very much based on that quote, because the hero, he comes from a very lower class background. You know, he's an orphan, he's a homeless kid, but he grows up to lead this revolution. And he does it with, it's really a peasant's revolt. He does it with the poor. He does it with the workers. He does it with fishermen. He does it with shopkeepers. And they are not waiting for a savior from the ruling classes. They do it themselves. So I hope the reader gets some enjoyment out of that too.
JJ, the story deals with revolution, and certainly here in the United States lately, you know, a country that originally was formed under colonialism and revolution, but really under much different circumstances than I think the places you're talking about. But even today, we have people who are very frustrated with, you know, what they call an oppressive government, and are you know, their rumblings of revolution and civil war. What do you think about that in comparison to your own work?
Yeah. You know, having spent a lot of time in Africa, you know, I lived in Southern Africa for several years, towards the end of apartheid in South Africa. And I lived in Colombia, I've lived in Brazil. You know, for the global South, people there have been, their lands, their livelihoods, everything has been just ransacked by colonialism and by capitalism. You know, if you go to the outskirts of or you go to Soweto in South Africa, this huge slum, you go to the favelas in Brazil, you go to the copper mines in Chile. Now that is a hard life. So, you know, when I hear people in the States complaining about, you know, not about having to wear a mask or whatever, for me, it's almost a joke, because I've seen how the people live in the favelas in Brazil, in the slums of South Africa. And that's what real oppression looks like. That's what real suffering looks like. And so part of what I'm trying to do in my fiction is just encapsulate or illustrate some of what it's actually like to live under an oppressive regime. It's nothing like living in the States. Not at all. An oppressive regime means you cannot speak your mind. There was a famous, there's an Egyptian activist who, he was in constant danger of being arrested, of being murdered. And at one point he just said, I was afraid to dream the wrong dreams, because I would be arrested the following morning. Yeah. That's what real repression looks like.
Yeah.
And so I just want to keep that in perspective for us in the United States, in Europe. Things are a lot easier.
Yeah. And again, JJ, you are and frequently, mostly located here in New Mexico, as it turns out. When are you coming back this way?
I'm coming back in January.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right. The plot thickens. Early January?
I am coming back January the 4th. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we must talk. I guess as we wind up here today, JJ, what are some of your final thoughts on your novel and I guess the state of the world, New Mexico, Brazil, yeah, wherever you'd like?
Okay, well, first I just want to say thank you ever so much, John, for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be on Radio Free Galisteo. Thoughts on the novel. The novel is called Nazaré, and I just hope readers will enjoy it, enjoy the language, enjoy the characters and the story. Thoughts on the world. Well, we'd be here all night, but... yeah, I can't really go into thoughts on the world.
Okay. We'll wait till you get up here.
All right, that sounds good.
All right, and Nazare is available through PM Press at www.pmpress.org, and that is where we would like to send you to buy it, correct?
Correct.
Word to the wise is sufficient. Okay, you've been listening to J.J. Amavaro Wilson, the author of Nazare, available through PM Press. J.J., thank you again.
Thanks ever so much, John. Thank you.
And for Radio Free Galisteo, I'm John Shannon.
This is Radio Free Galisteo. Music and information from the Galisteo Basin. Radio Free Galisteo is listener supported. Go to www.radiofreegalisteo.com and click on our Patreon support button to become an active supporting member of Radio Free Galisteo.